That's right. This is CHRY 105.5 FM, and this is Amandala, an African perspective, your source for news and views from the African continent. Crossroads is a new graphic novel history series on women's organized resistance to slum clearances in Crossroads, South Africa from 1975 to 2014. The series is illustrated by brothers Andre and Nathan Trantal and written by Connie Benson, who is on the phone line with us right now. So tell us a bit more about this amazing comic book series and also the history of women's resistance in South Africa in terms of housing. Hello, Connie.
Hi, hello. Thank you for being interested in the history and the project.
Great, and thank you so much for joining us. And it's great to have such a clear line from South Africa. So I wanted to start off by asking you to historically situate this graphic novel a bit. So Crossroads is the only African informal settlement that successfully resisted the apartheid bulldozers. So can you maybe historically situate this movement and tell us about South African apartheid's housing policy and why this is significant?
Okay, sure. So between the 1960s and the 1980s, there was 3.5 million forced removals in South Africa, which was how the government implemented apartheid, which most people know means separateness. So the Group Areas Act to segregate the country created Bantustans, which were supposedly these homelands of where people from different language backgrounds were supposed to go. If you were Xhosa, if you were Zulu, if you're Sotho, if you're Pedi, you would go to these different homelands. And in the cities, those were considered areas for white people, except for black people who were there as workers, predominantly male workers, set up with a migrant labor system. So men would come from the Bantustans to the mines or the cities or the farms only for as long as their labor was needed. They were considered bachelors for the most part, even if they were married and had children. And probably about once a year, they would go back home to visit. And this kind of policy had started long before apartheid, as land was taken and people were shifted off of kind of prime property. And by the 20s or the 30s, the land could no longer reproduce people or even keep livestock. And so women were coming in larger and larger numbers to the city, in part to be with their families, but also just in part to try to make ends meet because they were just watching their children die, basically, in these homelands. And in the 40s and 50s, there were big waves of people who came to the city. And in the 1960s, they were demolished, and really, like the apartheid, one of the reasons the Nationalist Party, won seats and came into power in 1948 was under the auspices that the cities were out of control. And so they were going to organize the cities, and they had all sorts of really offensive names of influx control and efflux and sanitation segregation and all of this in order to control the cities. And so at this point in time, these huge settlements were demolished and people were kind of pushed into segregated zones. And the repression increased, especially in the 1960s, where political parties were made illegal. By then, the nationalists had a majority in government. So the laws they had created in the 50s were implemented in the 60s. And the 60s were known as a sort of sexist crucible, especially for African women, because they were seen by the colonists, and this was typical in all of Southern Africa, as representing permanence in the city, but also it was seen or said to be that if African women were in the cities, men and workers would be a lot more militant in their demands because they would need housing and education and health care for their families. And who was supposed to carry the cost of the social reproduction? It was African women who were supposed to be reproducing the labor force for free in these reserves. And so as they came to the city, it threatened that system. And if the cities were, no longer majority white, then that was, a big threat to the apartheid authorities, to white people in South Africa. And so they sort of mastered apophis kind of paranoia. And in the 60s, people were sent out, demolished, really intensified forced removals. And then there was this small window of an economic boom in the early 1970s. And so the state would just turn a blind eye because business needed workers. And more people came to the city at this time. And then as soon as the economy crashed and a recession hit in the late 1970s, all of a sudden, then they wanted to get rid of who they called about 100,000 illegals. So they deemed these people illegal and said, we need to get them out of the city. We need to do it now. So one by one, they would demolish these informal settlements that had been established, because one of the ways they kept people out of the city was through passes and also by purposely limiting housing. So accommodation was one way to keep people out. But, of course, it didn't keep people out. All it did was it created a kind of overcrowding and housing crisis. Mm-hmm. And so these informal settlements often were predominantly women because they had nowhere else to go. All of the housing in the cities was bachelor accommodation and sort of apartment blocks for men. And you could only get in there if you had a pass. So women would often sneak, and they would sleep with their children, hiding their children under the bed, and have to kind of disperse and be lay low in the days. Or women could work as domestic workers, where they had to send their children to the Eastern Cape. They would live on the premises of white employers as domestic workers. But if you wanted to live as a family and with your children, there was nowhere. So they would establish shacks on open pieces of land. And so as the state started to weed people out, they demolished huge camps across the city. All at what were deemed African camps, squatter camps, were demolished by 1975. And what the government did was they started weeding so-called black people or African people out of so-called colored areas. So it was this kind of divide and rule of black people in South Africa, and especially in Cape Town. And so from there, they sent them to this patch of land at the crossroads of two major roads at an intersection that didn't even have a name, this transit camp. And from there, they were sent to, like, which Bantustan they were supposed to be sent back to. And when people were sent there, women then said, no, actually, we refuse to go. And what they decided to do was to organize themselves and to kind of collectively resist, and they made alliances with some organizations run by the churches and by kind of white liberals, the Black Sash, for example, as a kind of progressive white women's organization, who had never ever had women coming as a collective who had no legal rights to the city. Mostly what they had done up to that point in time was case by case help people who should have had a pass or should have had access, who for one reason or another didn't. And in this case, women from Crossroads came as a group, and they said, we're not leaving. We're not leaving the city, and so what can we do? And it sparked this campaign that grew, and it grew across the city, but it also grew internationally to the point where they had 22 U.S. congressmen stand up in the U.S. Congress in the late 1970s saying, don't demolish Crossroads. So it was the last standing of the African informal settlements, which also then makes it the longest standing, because it's still there today. And this campaign intersected with any student movements at the time, labor movements at the time. The last two decades of apartheid, from the mid-70s until the mid-90s, the economy was in decline and the system wasn't working. And so there was lots of resistance, but also a lot of repression and a lot of reform and negotiation going on. So that sort of set the stage to why women in Crossroads decided to organize in a women-only group and then make these alliances in order to be able to remain on this piece of land that then became known as Crossroads.
And, you've mentioned, of course, the context within within which it was truly a women's movement. So I'm wondering if maybe you could expand on that women, was Crossroads occupied only by women? And then what is the significance of this being a women's movement? And it's a way, in the way you tell it, it's a way of resisting against a unique kind of oppression that comes down on women in this time period. And of course, women as, you know, the forefront of housing is also very important. So could you maybe expand a bit on this being uniquely a women's movement, which I think is quite interesting?
Yeah, it's interesting in that it was women who were organized themselves as a women's committee. There were also men in Crossroads, and there were men's committees. A survey done in the mid-1970s asked people, and it shows that it was there were more women than men, not that many more, but more women than men, but also that the women who were there had nowhere else where they could legally go. Many of the men could legally, you know, stay in the hostels or on employers' premises. They had rights to the city that women didn't have. And so women felt, you know, women were in a more desperate situation, and also felt that nobody else was going to put their issues first and front and center, and that they needed to do something about it. So they had the most to lose, and the camp became known as a place full of Trans Guy women, and it was a place for women because it was where you could go if you had nowhere else to go. So they worked with the men's committee, but they also worked separately, and a lot of their protests happened separately. They marched to town to get water connected, so they walked, you know, 10, 15, mm-hmm. 20 kilometers. They would show up at the parliament offices before dawn, each of them having a baby on their back, and they had agreed that none of them would speak at all, and they would all pretend that they couldn't speak any English, even though some of these women had been teachers, and they were silent except for the noise of the children. And the people would show up to the parliament, to their jobs, and all these 300 women standing there. Then they would have to take time to go and send for an interpreter who would be smirking because he knew these women could speak English, many of them could, and through their alliances would have the progressive white media there, Cape Times, and so they would kind of stage these demonstrations. And if you look at the issues that they were organizing around, they were not organizing for women's rights per se. They were just organizing for access to basic human needs, which over time and today continue to be what most protests in South Africa are about. They're about social services for social reproduction, water, education, housing, and because of gendered roles, that responsibility falls on women's shoulders, which is why they're often the majority of membership, if not always the majority of leadership in community-based organizations in South Africa, and that continues even in Crossroads until today. So the comic book series starts in the early 1970s, with a bit of background from before that, but it goes all the way up until today. And after 1994, one of the first and most prolonged of what are now called the new service delivery protests happened in Crossroads, and it again happened as a women's only group. They called themselves the Women's Power Group, and they sat in on council offices for 4 months, demanding access to security and to schooling and to housing, etc. And so the issues, your question is a good one, because why is it women who are organizing, and what are they organizing for? And they're not organizing for anything that is particular to women only, but they choose to organize in a kind of gendered mm-hmm. space. To ask them why is really interesting. So the comic book is based on over 60 life narratives that I did with women and people involved in those two struggles in Crossroads over the last 30, 40 years. And when you ask them why they organized only as women, they say, you know, especially the second group of women, they say it was to avoid violence. It was to avoid confrontation that revolved around gun violence. And so, you know, often people look at the sort of anti-apartheid struggle history of South Africa and say, it's amazing that South Africa got its independence without bloodshed, but I mean, especially in informal settlements and townships. The 80s were a time of, I mean, mass bloodshed, but also of groups of people trying to figure out how to organize differently, some choosing armed struggle, but also many and some using their labor power through the labor movements. But in communities, it was often organizing around social services.
And you mentioned that the book is based on 60 life narratives, which is an impressive amount of work. And I guess it's obvious why the book was written. It's a history that needs to be told. But I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit about why you chose the graphic novel form. And from what I understand, it's also a series. So could you tell us a bit about the genesis of the book and then more about the form of it?
Sure. I mean, hello?
Yeah, you're still there. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. I chose the graphic novel. I had, the series and the story comes through out of my PhD thesis. And while I was doing that work, I was trying to figure out a way to make it accessible and relevant. The way it became relevant was the work I started doing mostly with social movements and trade unions and many shack dwellers over the last 8 years has been around supporting movement building and organized resistance. And in a lot of that support work, I do a lot of sort of history and political education through an organization called the International Labor Research and Information Group that's been supporting these kind of struggles since the 1980s. And so in that work, I would present this history for organizations that are now emerging and organizing specifically around either women's issues or around housing. And it would be the feedback of what of it was most relevant to people today. What were the burning questions around gendered organizing, around social services, all of the kind of key things that are highlighted in the comic books. So through those workshops and sort of choosing what the issues would be, I was then looking for an accessible form. And I ended up reading a comic book written by Andre and Nathan Trontrol, the Trontrol brothers, who are cartoon artists that I worked with on this. And they had written a book called Coloreds about a little girl and her family who grow up in Bishop Lavies, which is a township of people who would have been considered colored under apartheid, and that's where they also grew up. And I really loved the drawing, but also the way that they took really serious and very difficult issues and didn't take any of the edge off of it, but also could show daily life and humor and kind of a lot of context and dynamics through drawing. And I knew that a 500-page thesis would need people who had an eye for capturing irony and metaphor and storytelling. And so I approached them to see if they would be interested. And part of doing it as a series instead of just one big fat graphic novel was so that it could be affordable and accessible and just much less precious than books. Eventually we will approach a publisher to do it as one big graphic novel. But for now, they're printed. It's much less expensive to print. They can be shared much easier. They're much less intimidating. And also we can get feedback as we go as to how different audiences respond to them. So we've now published the first three, and the fourth is being illustrated, and over the next 6 months it will be finished, which is why we chose to do it as a comic book and as a series.
Koni, is there a way that our listeners here in Toronto might be able to get a copy of the graphic novel, or maybe somewhere they can read it online or find out more information?
Yeah, they can order it from Blank Books. So if you Google Blank Books in Cape Town, it's a small alternative bookstore, and they run publishing press called Isotrope Media, and it can be ordered online. I hope to get it into a different book list or some stores in Toronto. And then also the first one of the three is, parts of it are online. And I'll just get the website, but probably if you Google Crossroads comic, it's on a blog website, and I will get that right now, and I'll give it to you in a second.
Okay, and you are tuned in to CHRY 105.5 FM. This is Amandla, an African Perspective, your only source for news and views from the African continent here in the city of Toronto. You can check out our blog. It is africanperspectives.tumblr.com to get more information about any of the interviews we've done on the airwaves. And if you want to listen to it again, if you want to pass it to a friend. And we'll also have all this information from Kony Benson about the Crossroads comic up there for you to check out, and also the links to getting the comic, and also to one of the comics that is online. I think you said the first book in the series, right?
Yeah. Here, the website is crossroads-project.cu.pn/. So that's where the first one can be seen online, and Isotope Media and Blank Books, their websites, their emails will also be on there. And people could also, on the Amandla blog, we can also put those links if that makes it easier.
Fabulous.
Well, feedback is definitely welcome. So
we'll definitely get those all up on both the CKUT Amandla blog and the Toronto one as well. Kony, I'd really like to thank you for joining us here today on Amandla, an African Perspective on CHRY, for telling us about this amazing initiative and the comic book. And hopefully when the series, takes flight again and maybe the book is out, we'll have you on air again.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much. Take care, Kony.
Okay, bye.
Bye. And that was Kony Benson, who is the author of a new comic book series called Crossroads, and it tells the story of the resistance to slum clearances in the Crossroads Township in South Africa.